Hello, my babies, and for the 299th time, welcome to Poker in the Ears. I'm Uncle Daddy Joe Stapleton. He's my work wife, James Hardigan.
Happy National Oreo Cookie Day, Joe. Major poker connection with this one.
Hold on, let me listen. Is that what you mean, or is there another one that I'm not so sure about?
No, I'm talking about I Bet It All.
I think we should try to find the poker connection for every single one of those that you do from now on, no matter how many steps it takes. Coming up on today's show, I know it's weird, but it's our 300th episode preview show. Our third century as a podcast, and we have got a major live show coming up at the Hippodrome in London, and we've got a few more details to share about that.
I would say, and you know, because you've been on as many calls about this as I have, this is not just an episode of the podcast. It is an event. Therefore, it does deserve its own preview.
It does, yeah. I mean, it's going to have a decent attendance of live people. It's got a decent budget attached to it. Food, drink, video, audio, a lot of moving pieces to this thing. So on the eve of our 300th anniversary, there is no more fitting guest to have than the executive producer and a supreme overlord of this show, Francine J. Watson. Now, I guess we should say this. Francine really did not want to come on the show. Even after agreeing to come on the show, took additional arm twisting to be the guest on this show. So I want to make it clear that we believe that speaking to the executive producer of not just this podcast, but more importantly, the award-winning EPT live streams, EPT TV shows, Shark Cage, Mystery Cast Challenge, Duel, Big Game on Tour, the list goes on and on. We think it is a very important person to talk to and one that you would enjoy hearing from about what she does and how she sort of came to be where she is in this poker world. Francine is going to talk to us a little bit as well about representing us at the Global Poker Awards, collecting our collective trophy, but hopefully what it takes to produce TV poker in general. And guess what, guys? You know, James has worked producing the TV shows for many years. I barely have an idea of what goes on behind the scenes. I'm not really privy to most of it.
By the way, I'm going to clip that, and that is going to become like the answer to any question. I barely have any idea. Just run that all the time.
Yeah, well, now you get the same plausible deniability that I have. You've been locked out as well. And I guess more on that statement at the 300th show. We're going to explain a little bit about what's going on with James and Joe in the coming years at PokerStars. On the subject of the Global Poker Awards also,
yes.
We're going to be speaking with another winner, part of the PokerStars family, Marley Sprague, who won for Twitter. For Twitter personality. And this week's superfan is Martin Rice. And we're doing some trivia about the movie, The Peanut Butter Falcon. James, I don't know if you remember, I did watch this movie a few years ago, did recommend it. It is a really fun, cute movie with a positive message. Hard to believe Shia LaBeouf is in it, but he really smashes it, to be perfectly honest. So,
cool. Well, we'll get into that later on. Let's quickly deal with unfinished business from last week. We had another what would you do scenario involving Sandy the Degenerate. In short, Sandy went to the player party at EPT Paris, had a few too many adult beverages, came back to the hotel, fell asleep on the bed completely fully clothed. The following morning realized that he was missing a 100 euro note, which somehow made its way into Sandy's bed, and the maid at the hotel thought that 100 euros was a tip. So what would you do? Would you say, no, that wasn't a tip. I lost that money. Give it back to me. And I think I said this on last week's show. My personal view is it's lost money. Just leave it where it is. Anyway, Big Andy 18 says, the what would you do for me totally depends on how I've been running that day. If I've binned 3 buy-ins at the casino, I'm hitting them with a, oh, that's where I dropped it. Thank you for finding it. But if I've had a good day, then they absolutely get it.
I would like to be a fly on the wall and watch that conversation in action and just see this person be like, thanks for finding it for me. It feels like a little easier said than done. Then again, I would probably be horrified at how easily some people would say that.
Reese Pulino says, is leaving a bill on the pillow the accepted way of giving a tip? I have to be honest, I was new to that as well. I thought you left it on like the table or the kind of the counter. Anyway, Reese says, I've always handed it to them in person. Surely Sandy noticed it before they leave the room if that's clearly laid on the pillow. But at the same time, housekeeping wouldn't be so openly thankful if they had to rummage down the back of the bed to find it. So on balance, I guess you have to let housekeeping keep it.
I agree with letting him keep it. Yeah, the way I've always been taught is that, because if you're in staying in a room, right, you might leave your money on the nightstand just because, right? That just might be where you keep it. That if it's on the pillow, they distinctly know that's like the international sign of this is for housekeeping. But remember, this wasn't on the pillow. This was like in the bed. So it's kind of like a weird in-between gray area.
Dirty Bird Chip. There is an argument. If you lose a note that size, you probably don't need it or deserve to lose it. In my mind, I would admit my mistake, kindly ask for it back, and then leave a good tip. Chances are I won't see that person again, and instead of one of us losing it, we both lose a little less. So what did Sandy do?
Well, first of all, I do want to bring up, I don't remember who said it, but there was someone in the Discord who didn't realize that Sandy is a different person.
It was Reese. Reese's initial post was then corrected because Reese thought that this was a continuation of the wallet saga.
Yes. So just to be clear, Sandy is an amalgamation of all the degenerate fucks on tour, male and female, which is why I will often tell the story without specifying a gender for this person. Sandy, when Sandy told me this story, I said, that money fucking gone. And Sandy agreed. There's just nothing you could do in that case. Sandy's not hurting for money. Sandy is not a person. Sandy is a person who would fire multiple bullets in every single event on the EPT. I actually, believe it or not, even though I am at a stage in my life where I would tearfully accept that this 100 euro tip has gone away from me and is never coming back, I do absolutely understand if you're the sort of person who's like, hey, by the way, I'm so sorry, but I can't give you that whole 100 euros. But hopefully you would give them a little something that's still considered a nice tip in return. So I mostly agree with however you want to handle it in this situation. To each their own here.
Yeah. So within the last week, I played some poker, Joe. I was in Vegas at the weekend, went to see Madonna perform on Saturday night. But on the Friday night, decided to play some 1-3 no limit at the Bellagio. I haven't played in the card room at Bellagio for a few years now. So sat down in a Friday night game. And I'm quite proud of myself because during the first couple of orbits where I was literally being dealt trash like 8 deuce offsuit, 9-4 and was just folding, I was paying attention. I was actually doing what you're meant to do, which is look at what's going on in the game and get a feel for the other players in the game. And I realized, okay, so we've got a couple of Vegas locals at one end of the table who are pretty solid. If they're raising, it means they've got it, and they generally play pretty ABC. I spotted who the kind of guy who overplays top pair, the guy who gets married to any pair he's made on the board, spotted the one really good player in the game who was 2 to my left. And because of that, I was able to pick my spots and only played for like an hour maybe, doubled my money. So I was actually quite happy with how it went.
That is worth noting. I played in a home game last night, first time in a long time, and I thought I was going to have something interesting to talk about. I don't. I lost my buy-in in the last near the last hand of the night. I bought it for $100. I got it in for my last 70 against our friend Josh Molina with a flush draw and brick and game over. That's it. I got one hand of showdown in 4 hours. Well, 2 if you count that one.
Meanwhile, the Madonna gig was good, but not great. Sorry, Madonna, but some of the song choices were weird. So this is the Celebration Tour, right? This is meant to be celebrating her 4 decades in the industry. So there's a lot of back catalog in there, but some of the choices were, look, I'm a Bond fan, but why the fuck would you sing Die Another Day and not Material Girl? Come on.
Interesting. I mean, is it for rights and or publishing stuff?
That they're no, I mean, they're her songs. Anyway, one other quick Vegas-related thing. I've been watching the most recent season of Drive to Survive on Netflix. Personally, I think it's probably the weakest season so far.
Oh.
And I was actually very disappointed with the final episode where they cover the Vegas Grand Prix. I just felt that it didn't really give you an idea of everything that was going on with that event and with that race, because they had this myopic focus on who's going to win in the battle for second place in the Constructors' Championship. Is it going to be Ferrari or Mercedes? It's red versus black. And it ignored, in my mind, too much of the, I guess, how some drivers weren't happy with the circus element of the Vegas event,
yeah.
The whole drama with the drain cover and what had to happen to rectify that circuit and make sure that they could do practice in the middle of the night on that Thursday. Overall, I just felt it was weak. But it's very difficult, right, to make a dramatic season when there was really no drama, when you had Max Verstappen just absolutely dominate. You had one car completely dominate, and there was no real competition for first. And ultimately, the battle for second, the battle for fourth is, who cares?
Yeah, maybe there's some things, tweaks that can be made to make the sport a little more competitive down the line. I don't know, but I will say that it makes sense that the event in Vegas is the one that sort of like didn't get the coverage that reflected what's going on there. You know why, James? Because every crew, when they go to Vegas, gets fucked up. They're probably trash the whole time. They're probably like in the pits and fucking drinking yards of beer. And they're like, oh shit, we missed the drain cover stuff because we're all spending our per diems at Circus in the goddamn craps pit.
Should we keep it Vegas related and quickly get into the Global Poker Awards? Because we did talk about the key winners on last week's episode. But I know, Joe, that you also have some thoughts on who you'd like to see recognized next year, because I don't disagree with your position, which is that this is an opportunity to showcase different people in the industry year on year. And there are some big names who've been working in poker for many years who probably deserve that recognition.
Yeah, and I don't know how much I've gotten into it on the show or how much I've done on live streams or on Twitter or whatever like that. I am on my soapbox a little bit about this here, and I had a lot of people clap back at me. Basically, I think the entire purpose of these awards is to shine a light on the industry, right? It's not
yes.
really about awarding the best. I'm sorry, it isn't. It's still very political. It's still very, you only vote for who you know. The voters, in my opinion, are not super informed. And that's okay. That's a part of any sort of industry awards. And I don't think it does any good. For example, James Hardigan won Best Broadcaster last year. This year, Ali Najad won Best Broadcaster. Did Ali really do a better job than James this year? Did James really do a worse job than he did last year? No. That's not how it works. Like, it's much better for these awards for people to be recognized. There's no point in there being a dynasty. There's no point in the World Series of Poker main event winning best event every year. It makes awards that like don't have a huge point to begin with even more pointless. And I'm sorry, but there's people out there like, no, it's the best. It's the winner should win. As far as I'm concerned, you're wrong. You're just wrong. So, a couple of names I'd like to rattle off that next year I would like to see recognized. David Tuckman, it's high time he's recognized. Jen Newell has done great work for years, and it would be nice to see her have an award. Same with Haley Hintz, Paul Seaton. I think maybe the biggest snub of recent memory is Thinking Poker. The Thinking Poker podcast is really a phenomenal show. And it doesn't, like I said, I think the guys at the Chip Race would totally even agree with me. It doesn't do a ton of good for Chip Race to win Best Podcast every year. For there to be other things that get the spotlight for a second is the best thing for the industry. So that's it. That's my soapbox. And I'm sure that when the awards come around next year, I'm going to try to like get like grassroots voting lists going, being like, hey, here are some people that are worth mentioning, including Francine Watson, by the way, because I would like to see her actually win that award at some point.
Just to quickly pick up on your list there, I mean, David Tuckman is a notable omission from the nominee list for many years when you consider that David's been doing the job as long as I have, and you think about all of the productions, the live streams and TV shows that he's done
Absolutely.
Over the years. So let's talk about people who won awards in 2024. Because last week's episode was an extended victory lap for Barney Boatman, deserved, we delayed shining the spotlight on the GPA winner. So we're going to talk to a couple of them this week, starting with the winner of, and this is the official name of the category, Joe, you may not like it, Best Twitter / X Personality. She is also the current custodian of the Spraggy moniker, following her deep run in EPT Prague. And for the avoidance of doubt, the other Sprag is now known simply as Ben. Marley Sprag, welcome back to Poker in the Ears.
Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on the award. In your mind, is it X or is it Twitter?
It is always Twitter until the day I die. I can't say X. It feels just wrong.
I'm with you on that one. Thank God. Okay, we're on the same page about that. Is it, so Marley, as someone that used to, I feel like we're in different Twitter categories, but in the same boat where we both used to be a lot more vocal on Twitter. Does it feel a little weird to win the Twitter award once you've seemingly stopped having the same Twitter personality that you used to have?
Yeah. I was a little shocked because I don't really tweet too much these days, but I post my content there and a lot of people find me there content wise. So I think that's maybe where it is, but in any event, I'm happy to have it. I'll take what I can get, honestly. Like, so I'm not complaining.
Yeah, for sure. And is it, so I just, you know, I want to ask about your evolution as a, we'll just start as a tweeter first. That sort of not tweeting much anymore, where does that come from? I know for me why I don't tweet as much anymore, but I'm curious to hear where your sort of sensibilities lie these days.
Well, I don't know. I used to just get in there and just like have heated discussions with people about things. And I just kind of got to the point where I just felt like it wasn't ever getting me anywhere. No one was ever changing their mind. And I just kind of felt like those conversations were better left off the internet. So that's what I do now.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah, same. Absolutely. I mean, I still get into the muck way more than I should, but it's way less than I used to. I totally can relate to that.
Yeah.
So, Marley, obviously you were in Paris when the ceremony took place. Did you stay up all night to see the awards, or did you just find out when you woke up in the morning, oh, I won an award?
I didn't watch them in their entirety, but I was like keeping on like Twitter and stuff. So when it happened, I kind of knew right in real time, and it was
right.
Exciting. It was exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I know that you said that you're happy to take the award in any form it comes in, and I feel like the voters kind of misunderstand some of the categories. Like, you know, we would probably put you more in as a, what was the one that Caitlin won?
Short form content creator.
Yeah, like I assume that would be the one that you would, if you were going to put yourself in a category, it would be that one, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And they also did like best video as well. But that was more,
yeah.
That's like the best video category. Doyle won, which he should have, that the Doyle documentary. But that's just like a totally different thing than what I do. And that would,
of course. So, I mean, we talked about, if you think about best video content, I mean, something like Game of Gold could go in that category.
Yeah.
A documentary could go in that category. The stuff you create can go in that category. And I don't believe that we need even more categories, but it is kind of hard to work out what should be where.
Yeah, for sure. It is.
Is there changes that you would make? Do you have ideas for ways to make these awards a little more specific and or a little bit more, I guess, equitable for to truly shine a light on all of the talent that's out there?
Well, I heard Will Jaffe on the Only Friends podcast say some things about how there really isn't too many awards for actual poker players. And
yeah.
Actually, like cash game players, like totally, I feel like get ignored. And I think that they should really focus on more actual poker players. It is more of like an industry thing. It's mostly industry people, which they would be recognized too. I kind of consider myself both. So I guess I think just more poker players. And yeah, it's just hard because a lot of the voters like don't watch all the things that they vote for. They aren't familiar with certain genres. And so they just kind of, I think, maybe, and I do the same thing. But it's hard because Yeah, maybe like a voting plus some sort of like open ballot to the public as well, and then marry the two to get the result. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I heard Will say exactly the same thing. But I think the reason why the awards exist was to shine a spotlight specifically on the people in the industry who no one knows about, right? Because poker players do get a certain amount of attention from deep runs in tournaments, winning major events. I agree with you about cash game players. But again, now we've got more and more cash streams. They're getting their time in the spotlight as well. But I do think there's a balance. And maybe it's become too skewed in favor of the big players in the poker industry.
Yeah. Not the actual players, but the big industry players, not the poker players.
I was spelling it P-L-A-Y-A-S.
Yeah, okay, exactly. Got it. Yeah. Marley, one thing I did want to talk to you about, and I don't want to stitch you up at all, but at this point, there are a bunch of people out there doing what only you were kind of doing, like maybe like 7 or 8 years ago. And I just wonder, how do you feel about the people that I'll say copycat, but not in a bad way, but just sort of, you know, similar genre, similar style of sketches that they're putting out there. How do you feel about those folks coming up behind you when you see that stuff?
No, I think that it's great. And again, I wasn't the first one. Like, there's people doing it before me. I know person that comes to mind is Christy Arnett, was making some videos like this before I was doing it. And I certainly didn't like make this up, but like, but yeah, I mean, it's great. I just like to encourage people to kind of find their own voice and their own style, and don't just kind of go on TikTok or Instagram and just kind of copy and paste. And sometimes I do see that. I see some people just copying almost like word for word sometimes. And that's,
yes,
you know, you get, it sucks. Like, yeah, it's a little bit like, you know, but when you're first starting, I guess you have to like mimic people and stuff, but yeah, just find your own voice. And I encourage people to
always see it as mimicking intentionally. Sometimes I see it as just, and I see it in all kinds of creative endeavors, especially when it's young people. It's more like a lack of reverence and or knowledge of what's come before them. You know, maybe it is just straight up copycatting, but a lot of it, I just see it as like, oh, bless. Like, oh, you don't know. Like, you don't know that people have been doing this for a really long time. People have been making funny poker videos for a while now. And this idea, this has been done. It's been done in recent history, you know, and it's been done in ancient history. And I find that whether it's poker content or stand-up comedy, or you know when I watch clips of people doing crowd work, you know, on you know these viral stand-up comedy clips, I'm like, oh yeah, no, this isn't that original.
Yeah, I feel like it's a fine line because I kind of go too far the other way sometimes, where I'm like, if an idea has even been like remotely brushed up upon, I can't do it. Where one comes to mind where I was going to make a markup police video, and then it came to my attention that Mattisau had made one back in the day. And of course mine was going to be completely different and like totally just like a different idea. But I just like didn't make it because I just thought, I don't want to see, I don't know. It's tough because, again, like just because someone does something about a topic doesn't mean it's off limits for the rest of your life, but you don't want to steal bits, you know?
Yeah, look, in that particular thing, that's out there, right? Like markup police is out there. I think if you did your own take on it and you did your Marley version of it and it was nothing to do with the Mattisau version or the Deeb version or whatever it is, I think that that's perfectly reasonable. However, I know exactly what you're talking about. And you're like, oh, God, someone did this.
I'm going to stand by my words. Plagiarism saves time. Marley, we haven't had a chance to catch up with you since EPT Prague. I referenced it at the start. I'm sure you were aware of the level of support, the level of love there was as you made a deep run in a huge field, in a big EPT at the end of the year. It's a cliched question, but I'm going to ask it. What was it like?
It was surreal. The biggest thing was I really found it hard to sleep the last couple days and even the following couple days. It's just such a, no one can prepare you for the feeling that you get being deep in an event of that importance. But no, it was just amazing. And like, again, the support was amazing and just, you just like don't expect to be there, and then you're just there, and then you're like, oh my God, I made this video about ICM and how like when you're deep in something and you just like cram ICM, she's like, fuck, I should have studied this. Like, I work on this. What was I doing? Like, fuck. So that was a thing. And just, yeah.
Two follow-ups to that. One is, when you can't sleep, are you thinking about your opponents? Are you thinking about hands that you've already played? Are you thinking about how much money you could potentially win? Like, what is it on your, is it all of the above?
It's just like, it's more like I don't want to make mistakes. And if I, like, again, like, this is a poker brain. Like, if I bust and I play well, like, it doesn't really bother me as much, but like, I just don't want to make mistakes. And it's such a big spot. And then you just keep thinking, I'll never be here again, which obviously isn't true. But in the moment, you're like, I'm never going to be here again. Like, I don't want to make a mistake. Just, you know, you just want to play well, and just, it's hard to sleep.
Okay. And then my other question is, you were involved in like a hand that, if you were going to have a dream about a poker hand, like, yeah, that was surreal. And your reaction to it in the moment is so genuine and so overjoyed. Do you replay that memory in your head of that hand?
I do, man. It's, for those of you who don't know, I got an aces versus kings versus ace king with like four tables left or three tables left. And it was just amazing. Like, yeah, I peeled my hand. I had it in the big blind too. And I peeled it right away. And as like the action just unfolded in front of me, and you just have aces and you're just like, head is exploding.
You're like, what? No. Yes.
Oh my God. They're putting money in. I have aces. Oh my God. No, it's just like, what can I say? Playing well, I didn't do anything. I just sat there and put my money in. But yeah, it was surreal.
That's the dream moment. So, okay. So you have that extreme high in that moment. How low was the low when you finally went broke? Was it super disappointing? How did you handle that?
It was disappointing. Yeah. It was disappointing. And, you know, you just like always just feel like I'll never be there again. But it just like, I got over it pretty quick. I have a great support system. We went out that night, didn't get too crazy, but we, you know, had a good group and everyone was so supportive. And even like, and then listening back to it later, like even in the commentary, you guys were so supportive and like, you know, and I just felt like, you know, I felt like I did my best. And yeah, it's just one more chance, one more shot.
I would feel the same way. At least part of me would be like, oh, I'll never be there again. But I know, you know, that you will, because you really have put in tons of work in your content over the last few years, tons of work in your poker game over the last few years. It's been really impressive to see that evolution, Marley. And before we wrap things up here, are we going to see you at the Hippodrome next week for our 300th episode?
Yes, I'll be there. I'm excited.
All right. Fantastic. I was hoping you'd say yes, because we're making you a bounty in the poker tournament afterwards. Marley, look forward to seeing you at the Hippodrome next week. We'll talk more about that event later in the show, but congratulations once again.
Thank you so much.
So, moving on, and apologies for now self-indulgently celebrating the success of PokerStars winning Best Live Stream. But do you know what? It was a fan vote, so you only have yourselves to blame. As we said last week, great to see the entire production team recognized. This was genuinely a team award. But representing us in Vegas was our leader, Francine Watson, Associate Director, Creative and Content at PokerStars. Francine, welcome finally to the podcast.
Hello, Jamesy and Joey. Sorry that it's taken so long.
Yeah, it's been 299 episodes.
I am going to say the word congrats, because this does feel like it was your award, because A, you are in charge of that team I just referenced, but also you were there at the very start, 2007, for the launch of these live streams.
Why must you be telling everyone my age, Jamesy? Why?
At the tender age of just 19 years old, you were there for the start of the EFT live streams.
Yes. Well, first of all, it was definitely the whole team's award. So thank you very much for singling me out. But it was very much the team's award and fully, fully deserved. I was there from the beginning and have believed in the power of live poker from the beginning, for sure. And I'm very, very proud to leave this kind of brilliant team of passionate sort of broadcast individuals. But I definitely feel like it's one for the team. You guys massively included, obviously.
So what was your job in 2007?
Oh my gosh. So back then, I guess I was more on the producing side, more hands-on producing. I suppose, Joey, I'm kind of like responsible for the wider team now and lots of different output for Stars. But back then I was very much on the ground, on the coalface, involved in every single side of putting the broadcast together, really. And that's my passion, right? That's where I come from. I've got a broadcast background. I came from live sports TV, so I kind of brought all of that experience into live poker.
I remember the very first live stream that I worked on, which was Barcelona 2007. It was the World Cup of Poker, and Francine was at the desk. You were what we now call the delay producer, and the way we have Chris in our ears now, you were that person back then.
I feel like my memory is like closer to Joe's in terms of effectiveness versus yours, James. Like, I feel like maybe Joe asked James what I was doing and when I did it, because I defer to him on that stuff. I can't remember anything.
Well, if you can't remember it, then I guess I don't necessarily need to ask this question, but when you were doing that job, did you ever think like one day I'm going to be in charge of all of this?
I don't think I ever thought about it like that. I think probably the first thing to say is when I first started in telly, I was very much more in a logistics role anyway. That tends to be kind of girls are pushed in that direction. So I think I was probably back then, just certainly back in the World Cup of Poker times, it was a super fun format, had an amazing atmosphere, and it was just a really great thing to do. But also that was kind of really my first foray into properly producing. And I just felt so lucky and just love the fact that I was able to produce and kind of move across into that more kind of creative and editorial role. So in terms of, you know, where we are now, I don't think I ever really thought about it that way. I loved it. I love doing what we do. I got into TV because as a teenager, I thought TV was magic, and I just love anything that seems like it magically gets on screen and entertains people. And it's just grown from there, really.
You talked about starting in sports broadcasting, Francine, sports TV. How, why poker? It's barely a sport.
Well, that's John Duthie's fault. So thanks, yeah. John. He's got a lot to answer for, that John Duthie. John wanted to set up the EPT, kind of saw how successful poker was, obviously, across the pond. Knew we didn't have an equivalent in Europe. And then he came, at the time I was working for Sunset and Vine, which is an independent sports production company. He came and was like, well, I want to do poker. I want to televise it. And think it kind of needs to be covered like a sport. And that's what Sunset and Vine did. And I, at the time, was working on cricket and football and all those kinds of things. And Sunset and Vine thought, all right, you know, why not? Poker, give it a try. Obviously, any TV production company, you get those types of jobs come in and they're a flash in the pan. I think probably everyone thought, yeah, we'd do poker for a year. Lovely. Year of poker, maybe 2 years of poker. And then here we are effectively, can't believe I'm saying this, this September, 20 years later, the EPT is, you know, thriving and stronger than ever. So, yeah, it's crazy, really, if I think about it.
So what was your entry level job into the entertainment business? I like to pontificate and tell people like, oh, you don't screw up lunch. Was that at one point your entry level job?
Yeah, for sure. That is excellent advice for getting into the entertainment industry, I will say, Joe. So everybody should listen to you. Don't screw up lunch. I started on reception. Which is kind of more boring than being a runner, right? Because a runner gets to run around on actual shoots and meet potentially famous people and deliver lunches to cool people and see cameramen or whatever, camera ups. And I was receptionist. And then I believe I was a librarian. So that was arguably even more boring because I was in the tape library back in the day when you're like proper tapes, big heavy tapes and moving big kind of like I don't know, those wheeling things, all the texting. So I did all of that, but it was great at Sunset and Vine. They kind of wanted to bring people up. So at the same time, we'd go out on shoots, and I started on the cricket, and I was running, and think, God, the steps I used to do on that. But yeah, really fun times.
I assume that your passion for poker would have had to develop, considering nobody really knew what it was back then. How did it develop? What made you, was it just sort of the ends justified the means, and you developed a taste for poker because it was there? Or was it that, what do you like it?
I'm guessing that first event, no one really knew what they were doing, right? I imagine it was probably a bit of a shit show.
Yes, I kind of want to steal Gary, our colleague's line. Like, have you seen the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan? It was a bit like that. So I think probably John. So John back then, obviously John. I don't know. I've seen people know, but John is the TV director. So he was very much in kind of like the hot seat at the front of the truck that we had then. And then there was a sort of team around him of very competent sports TV sort of professionals, but who literally were watching all the monitors like, what is this now? And of course, we didn't have the technology that we have now, right? So we don't right now with our graphics and logging the cards and RFID technology, that kind of happens for you and it comes up on a screen, whatever. I remember it was me and another producer, Alex, literally logging cards on paper, and not knowing, I was like, two aces is a good hand, but the rest of the time you're like, I don't know if this is good. And if you don't know something the way we didn't know poker, you have to write everything down. You're like, right. I'm just going to write everything because I don't know what the key information is. So yeah, it was definitely lots of confusion. We relied on John, legend that he is. But I think in terms of why we kept doing it, or why I've kept doing it, and why I sort of fell in love with the game, it's the players. And I mean, the game itself, obviously, it's just a crazy, I just remember looking around and thinking, wow, these people in this game is so clever, and not in necessarily this sort of, obviously there is the mathematical side of poker, but the mind game side of the game, obviously the players playing each other and not the cards themselves, but also just then the characters themselves. They're just, in my experience, all of the players that I've met, they've just, a lot of them got brilliant stories, and it's still happening now. When you look at, you know, what Barney Boatman just achieved in Paris. Barney's someone we've been covering for years, and the players like him, they're so interesting and so fascinating. And that's pretty much, that's why I've stayed.
So I brought my own sensibilities into what I think makes a good poker TV show. And other than the first couple of years when I wasn't working with you, but for the vast majority of my career, I've been working with you, and you have helped to shape what I think makes a good poker TV show. If I were to go work for another company, I would bring a lot of philosophies, or another TV show, a lot of philosophies and a lot of, hey, here's what makes a good poker TV show. It's X, Y, and Z, and we don't have enough of this, and we have too much of that. And a lot of that has been shaped by you over the years. And I'm wondering, who is it that imparted that wisdom onto you? Is that something that you just developed on your own? Or did you have a person who said, no, you need to have X, Y, and Z in these poker broadcasts to make it palatable for the audience at large?
I think that there's obviously, I had mentors and producers within the sports TV background who kind of, taught me how to put together sports highlights, I suppose, Joe. But I guess the difference with poker was, it's not the same as just going, right, okay, here's a football match, let's put all the goals in, let's do that. It's not that, because, well, apart from anything else, it's so long, right? Like, this is the thing. So certainly I have taken so much inspiration and guidance from the likes of Matt Morantz, iconic, kind of executive producer of the World Series shows back in the day. Matt is a brilliant, brilliant storyteller. And yeah, I certainly learned from him that, we follow the characters as much as we follow the poker. So it's not just a case of going, right, we could quite easily say, what's the 10 best hands from today? Great, that's a show. Well, that wouldn't necessarily make a very compelling show. We say, you know, who are the most interesting people and what are they doing? And then what are their best hands? And let's tie that all together. And that's the same, whether it's at the feature table or out in the field. It's about making sure you get the balance right between people and then the game as well. And obviously staying completely authentic and true to the game at all times. So,
yeah, annoyingly so sometimes, where I'm like, we can just fudge this. And you're like, no. Can you take us through what the process is from live cards being dealt, let's say at EPT Barcelona, to when that hand is shown on television? What is the process? What are the various layers that it goes through? Because I know it takes a long ass time, but I'm not sure what's all happening within that. And I would like to be educated on that. And I think our audience would like to know what the process is also.
Does take a long time. You're right. I really must get the team to speed up, Joey.
Well, there's a lot of hours of poker. And when you consider that those hours are duplicated, right? Because you've got cameras on the feature table, cameras on the secondary feature table, cameras out in the field.
We're talking thousands of hours of footage, right? When you add it all up.
And I'm guessing the starting point is someone has to watch that.
So, yeah, I guess it starts, we walk away. Like, so obviously there's the kind of editorial team in the truck or in the gallery watching the action as it unfolds. And there's a certain amount, I think, when it comes to the feature table hands and to a degree the secondary feature table hands, we kind of walk away from an event knowing, okay, at least these are the best hands. And we obviously, we pick the feature tables as we go. So we're like, these are the people we're following. These are the people we care about. These are the people we're interviewing. So we know that they're the stars of the show, if you will. And then when you come back to the office, there's a huge amount of obviously logging of everything that has to happen so that, you know, because realistically, nobody's going to watch every frame of the footage, right? Mm-hmm. So that process starts. And then we have individual show producers pretty much for each show. So we have an overarching kind of like series producer who's making sure we're across the overall narrative of the series, and then individual producers for each of those shows who are effectively going through and saying, right, pretty much the feature table hands form the backbone of the show, right? So these are my A star characters. This is the backbone of the show. These are the eight hands that make up that. Right, out in the field, these are my A star characters. I've been through the footage. I know these are the most exciting hands. These are the best characters. They then select, you know, what are the best moments to go in from that side. And then the same pretty much from the secondary feature table. Obviously they do a whole job around scripting it all out, and then they get into edit and it's essentially cutting the hands, cutting the feet, the outer table stuff, putting it all together into one edit. We go through various kind of viewing processes, which is obviously, well, I can only tell you that watching poker shows without any graphics or any commentary is, you know, it's pretty tough.
Yeah.
But we do a bunch of that. And then, you know, we go through these kind of layers of approval and fixes. And then at the end, it's ready for you guys to essentially watch it and voice it and make it amazing, which is what you guys do.
And or at least try.
One thing that I've always wondered about, how you said there's different, you know, let's say there's eight shows from Barcelona and you might have, what, four producers working on those eight shows, like maybe two shows a piece. Is there ever a battle? Let's say Andre Letao gives a really great interview. Do the producers have to fight over that footage? Like, who gets to use that interview in their show, that really great soundbite?
You literally give one a fork, one a knife, and let them go at it.
It's like a public showdown, and they have to just, yeah. Definitely, yeah. I think they fight over the best sound. They fight over the best characters. They fight over, because they massively care, right? They want their show to be the best. They fight over the music tracks. They fight over everything. But largely it will come down to, okay, what works best for the overarching narrative then? Like, okay, cool, we need to save that because we know, you know, whatever, they're making the final table, this is going to happen. So we tend to find a way forward that is amicable most of the time.
I know, fortunately, we don't have to choose, but if you had to pick one, live poker or post-produced poker?
Post-produced poker.
Hey, me too. Yeah, me too.
Actually, I guess there's two things. So I love live. I guess that's why. So the AFPs that we do, the kind of the highlight shows that we make, we get that element of live anyway, because you're there live in the moment filming it. And I love that. And I love how quickly you have to react and just reacting to the stories and what's sort of evolving in front of you. But the fact that we get to then bring that back and effectively make it better That's the magic of it. We go, well, listen, this was great, but we all know live poker's really long. Whatever, we're doing 10-hour streams, you guys do it. We get to bring it back and go, these are the best moments. We can make them more dramatic. We can cut them down if they're too long. We can make them more exciting. We can make the characters better so that you can invest in them more as a viewer. Hopefully what we do in the post is we make something that's already awesome more awesome and hopefully attract a more casual audience too.
Speaking of taking stuff that happened live and making it better and enhancing it, are you, how often are you saving someone from looking really bad? How often are you doing your best to take maybe what is some not great behavior at the poker table and cut around it? And how often are you tempted just to let this person hang themselves?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, it does happen. And sometimes it's not the player's fault. Not everybody's great on camera. And, you know, do you know what I mean? It's not always that someone's being nasty or being difficult. It's just that they're awkward or whatever. So I would say we're very sensitive to that. I would like to think we are. And we're definitely not in the business of making people look bad. That being said, if you're a particular type of player who likes to get out there and is in somebody's face and whatever, then that's what is going to be portrayed on television for sure. Because presumably you knew you were being filmed and you're okay with that. We're just never gonna, we're not, you know, the X Factor or Pop Idol. And if this, we're not trying to make people look bad. We're not trying to exploit players. We're trying to tell, you know, be true to what happened and be accurate. Definitely being sensitive to that and not making somebody look like an idiot also. We're trying to essentially do what's right, I think.
But if someone does an Ivan Freitas, you're not going to cover that up. That happened. No, it needs to be shown.
No, that has to be documented. Absolutely.
You alluded already to the EPT turning 20 this summer. I think you might be the only person at PokerStars, still at PokerStars, who was at that very first European Poker Tour event. What does the EPT mean to you?
Oh, it just made me go tingly. No, it genuinely does. Well, I never thought I would be here still doing it 20 years later, and not in a bad way. I'm not sure any of us ever think we'll be doing anything 20 years later, do we? The EPT, poker in general, but the EPT especially, has just afforded me so much. It's given me so much. Like, of course, I've worked hard, and of course I, you know, it's not just like it was handed to me on a plate, but it's helped me to evolve my career. I think I've had opportunities because of the EPT that I certainly wouldn't have enjoyed in other particularly sports. Like, it would have been much, much harder for me. The EPT has just allowed me to move up and just, I've had so much variety in my career, whether that's doing that, making from making AFBs to making Kid Poker to the podcast to, I don't know, organic social. So it's just given me so much variety. It's given me brilliant colleagues. It's given me you guys. It's given me friends.
I like how we're separate from brilliant colleagues. She was like, it's given me brilliant colleagues and it's given me you guys.
I want to be clear on that. It's afforded me ever so much, and I'm ever, ever grateful and thankful. So,
well, I'm glad that you brought that up, because one thing I did want to ask, which is somewhat self-serving, but I do think the audience is curious: is it difficult to be our boss?
It's very difficult indeed. Actually, I think I should get a raise, to be honest.
I'm fine with that. But there must be times, there must have been various times where James and or myself has made your job more difficult than it needs to be. How frequent?
Hang on. Why are you lumping me in with you in this? Come on.
I think it would only be fair.
Because you're difficult in a different way.
Correct.
Okay. I'll take that.
So, yeah, how frequent are those moments?
I think it would be unfair to say that you make my life difficult. It truly is a joy working with you two. Obviously, there are moments when, you know, you've been known to get a bit talenty. You know, James doesn't like having the sun in his eyes when he's doing a leak. That is a problem. We see some somewhat diva-y behavior when this happens. Joey, you know, sometimes you can't remember stuff and, you know, these things happen. But no, generally speaking, I think that we have a whale of a time making content that hopefully people love, and we're very, very lucky because, you know, Pete's working for a living, so.
And if you couldn't do poker anymore, if you had your choice of something to cover moving forward, do you have a backup sport and or industry and or reality series that you would like to produce? For scripted?
I don't think I do. I don't think I do have a backup. I think I would like to do another documentary. I think I mentioned Kid Poker earlier. I would love for us to do another long form, you know, proper storytelling piece around someone in poker. I would like to kind of delve back into that.
Enough time has passed since the last one that you forgot how stressful it was, basically, is what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah, like anything, right? You need to have a good 10-year gap before you do it again.
Yes. Yeah, it's like when we're talking about, we need to do a third season of Shark Cage, and then we remembered like that was not an easy show to post-produce.
I know, but we put poker players in a cage. Like, how did we even get it signed off?
Well, to be clear, and I tell this story all the time, and you can back me up on this, it started with the name, and you work backwards from there.
Every great format starts that way.
And I guess one last self-serving question here is, what went into the thought process behind putting me and James together? Was it that well thought out? Was it just a happenstance? Like, obviously, you had something to do with that. I guess I want to know how much and what the plan was behind the scenes.
I think you were just available, Joe, no?
Yeah, I was certainly available, and I still am. I've never not been available.
I think it's like, listen, putting together duos that work really well together is massively important. If we don't get you and James right, or the commentary team right, the talent right in general, wider talent team, look at the likes of Maria and Griffin as well on the stream. If you don't get that right, it just falls flat. It's terrible. So it's critically important that you do spend the time getting it right. We had, and to be honest with you, again, James will probably have to fill me in on how it went down exactly, because I can't remember the detail of this stuff, but we heard you guys together and we knew it was going to work, right? So,
yeah, I think it was, we've talked about it before. You came on to one of the NAPT live streams as a guest. Then we did our first live stream together, and then we did our first TV show together on the NAPT. And yeah, in terms of your availability, when the NAPT finished the first time for, you know, reasons that we won't go into now, it's like, oh, maybe we can bring this guy to Europe and continue this fledgling partnership.
Well, yeah. Francine.
We loved you, Joey. We loved you, Joey. Don't worry about it. It's all good. We don't plan on getting rid of you just yet.
I guess that leads to my final question. I don't know if James has anything left.
No, go for it.
And that is that I remember that when I got brought in that very first time, the stakes felt very low to me. And early on those broadcasts, the stakes felt very low. And I don't know if you felt the same way. I don't know. Maybe it was a folly of youth. Maybe it was, I just don't think that we knew what we had, and things have gotten very serious over the years. And I just wonder if they've always felt that way to you, or if you've also felt increased pressure as your titles and your responsibility have increased over the years?
I guess in the early days, are you talking about streaming kind of specifically, or even just across the board? Streaming?
No, streaming specifically. Yeah. How important streaming has become compared to what it felt like back then.
Yeah. I think, as with everything, it was new and it was a bit of a test, like, oh, we'll see. And in fairness, I remember having various conversations, because back then, or certainly from there, I haven't always been kind of staff at Stars. I was freelance, so I would be talking to World Series and other people too, and there was a lot of resistance to live poker. Like, they didn't really see a future for it. And so I think, in a way, I guess, as opposed to the stakes not being very high, it was just that the expectations weren't massive. So I guess, you know, we could have, potentially we could go into it a bit less stressed and a bit more like, let's just have a bit of fun here and see. how it ends up.
I don't necessarily think it's about the stakes being lower. I think it was a different type of broadcast. And I would remind everyone that back in those days, live streams didn't have hole cards. So it inevitably becomes a bit like a radio show with some poker being played in the background, because you can't be as on the action as you are when you can actually see what people have.
Right, right.
Yeah, but I think now it's, you know, it's grown and it's grown and it's grown and the stakes are higher. But I suppose I will say, I don't think my attitude towards it, how the value that I place on it personally and in my role has never changed. For you guys will probably attest to this too. I'm a perfectionist. I'm a nightmare probably to work for. Sorry, team, love you. And I do approach everything with that attitude. So,
and that's why you should have won Best Industry Person. And that's why we have to double down on the campaign for next year, Joe.
Yeah, I think, Francine, you can release some budget for us maybe to, I don't know, like a double-decker bus, some kind of moving tribute, I think. Literally moving.
I mean, we'll see what's down the back of the sofa, Joe. I can't promise anything.
For you to be a real guest on this show, I had to give you the real guest treatment. And as you know, Francine, having heard many, many of my stupid games over the years, that you're going to get the same treatment as anyone else, although the same but different, because this game is called Poker in the Feels. And this is a trivia quiz about our history.
I don't approve this game.
This is a trivia quiz about our history together. Yes, so here we go. Don't worry, it's not all sappy.
James, question, can you help me?
James can help. Well, no, because he really knows all these answers. I'm pretty sure you do, too. I don't think you'll need help, but... question number one. James and I started creating bits our very first time in the booth together. We created the Gibbons bit our second time in the booth together. What is a Gibbons? Is it a triple check raise, a check in the dark, a limp under the gun, or is it an ape suffering from sexual dimorphism?
So can I just say, in my defense, the microphone cut out halfway through that.
But, okay, a triple check raise.
A limp under the gun?
A limp under the gun is correct.
All right, that's a point.
We're one for one. Question two. When you got mad at me that one time during a live broadcast for not letting James in on the references I was making, which show was I referencing? Was it The Good Office, a.k.a. The American Office? Was it I Think You Should Leave? Was it The Vanderpump Rules? Or was it The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City?
I really feel like this hasn't happened only once. So I feel like this is quite an unfair question.
All of the above.
All of the above.
I just remember getting messages from you, looking at my phone and getting a bunch of texts that says, if you're not going to let James in on the joke, move on.
That sounds like something I would say. I don't know. The first one, The Office?
It was not The Office. It was I Think You Should Leave, which James, by the way, did go back and watch and now makes references that leave other people in the dark. Question number...
I learned from the best.
Question number three. What is the go-to fake names that James and I use? I also snuck this name into the credits for the movie The Card Counter. Is it Greg Andromeda, Tony Pulaski, Gary Turnbuckle, or Chloe Silverado?
It is Gary Turnbuckle, and he is a real human man.
Gary Turnbuckle is correct, and he is a real human being. Bonus point.
He has a Hendenmob page, right, Joe?
He has a card player page. I think Hendenmob got keen to it eventually, but he does have a cash and card player. Question number four. After the first recording of this show, you told me you cut a joke on account of a particular topic never being funny. Do you remember what that topic was? Yes or no? Those are your two choices.
I think yes.
Okay, yes. I take your word for it. Yes. Ding. Moving on.
That was said with confidence. You're 3-1, Francine. You have a winning score right now.
Boom.
Question number five. Which of the infamous sketch locations caused Soundman Reggie to retch? Was it?
Oh, gosh.
The marina.
Reggie retches at a lot of things.
I remember this very clearly.
Was it the marina in Monte Carlo, the zoo in Barcelona, the loading dock in the Bahamas, or all of the above?
Man, it might be all of the above. Is it Monte Carlo?
That was you. You were the one who got sick in the marina in Monte Carlo. Reggie got sick at the zoo in Barcelona because...
They made him stand with the boom pole right above the rhinoceros pit, which was just like littered with shit, and he just could not take it anymore and threw up in a trash can.
And that's why we don't work with Reggie anymore.
Goodbye, Reggie. We hardly knew ye. All right, two questions left. Which of the following sitcom boss/bossy relationships describes my relationship with you? Are we Jack and Liz from 30 Rock, Don and Peggy from Mad Men, Michael Scott and Pam from the good version of The Office, or are we Walter White and Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad?
I feel like James should answer this one. I have no idea.
In all of these relationships, bar the last one, the man has seniority to the woman.
It's not about gender, James. It's about boss to employee.
Maybe the 30 Rock one.
I'll take it. I don't know. I didn't really have an answer in mind there. I just wanted to see what you were going to say. I'll take 30 Rock.
Okay, I'll give you the point.
And finally... Which of the following sitcom boss/bossy relationships describes your relationship with James? Is it Michael Scott and Dwight from The Office, Mr. Burns and Smithers, Jack Dalton and Andy Hunter from EastEnders, or Axe and Wags from Billions?
Let's just go Axe and Wags. I really don't know.
Yeah, not bad. I actually was assuming you were going to choose the last one in both cases. I thought you were going to say Walter White and Jesse Pinkman for us.
I was nearly going to go for that, but, you know, we've talked about 30 Rock. So
cooped up in a trailer, making crack for the masses. And I thought it would come down. I thought Axe and Wags would be the one you'd choose for you and James also. That's why I put those two last. Francine, thanks for coming on the show.
Finally.
Thank you very much for having me. Can I just tell you a bit of a secret that I need to admit to the team and the world at large?
God. All right.
So our lovely GPI trophy award, I got it out to show it to the team on a Zoom call. And I forgot that my little Yorkie Penny was running about. She doesn't like boxes. And so she ran up as I picked up the trophy, and now it might have like a little tiny scratch on it. So I don't know if anyone can see this. There it is.
Well, it's all of our scratch now.
It's all of our scratch, and I promise Eric and everyone I'll get it buffed out.
Great. The award is not even 2 weeks old and your dog has already destroyed it.
That's okay. Look, we spent the last 2 weeks pissing on the awards. It's no surprise that your dog has done the same.
I am actually mortified about this, by the way, but I did want to come clean about it because they are all going to see it in the office tomorrow. So,
wow. Francine, thank you so much. And I think that's really interesting stuff, which hopefully people who don't know how the sausage is made will really appreciate.
Thank you very much, boys. It's been really fun.
Okay, let's close out episode 299 with this week's Superfan Quiz, and we welcome Martin Rice to the proceedings. Hello, Martin.
Hello, guys.
What is up, Martin? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. My name is Martin. I'm 37 years old. I live close to Zurich. I worked in finance for 15 years, so no IT. I've been studying for primary school teacher right now, so a career change because during pandemic I had little time to think about what's really important to me. And I learned that working with young children is really more like what I have in mind for me. So yeah.
That is a hard segue to go from working in finance to working as a teacher. And
yes,
I think there must be a certain amount of, how can I put this politely, financial sacrifice, because I'm sure one job pays a lot more than the other.
Yes, a little bit, yeah. But yeah, it's not quite bad. In Switzerland, you get paid pretty well, even though you're like a primary school teacher. Yeah, and I'm really glad that I took this new career path. Yeah, in my spare time, my wife and I like to travel a lot. We just took up scuba diving last year, so we have a lot of fun exploring the new world.
I gotta ask you about when you say training to be a primary school teacher. Where I'm from, you don't need training. You just go. You just show up and they put you in front of a room full of kids. Are you working with kids already, or is there an extensive amount of school?
Actually, yes. I study like 2 days a week, and I also teach 2 days a week already, because they have not enough teachers anymore. So they're really happy that you're available.
Yeah, sure.
So as a matter of fact, even in Switzerland, it's pretty easy to get in. But of course, you need to finish school to do it the proper way.
Of course.
Yeah,
of course. Sure. So what role does poker play in your life, Martin?
My best friend and I started like 15 years ago. In our early 20s, we just had some fun in our local casino, and we played to have some fun and to earn money to get to the first studies. Yeah.
And, cool.
yeah, and that worked out quite well.
So I can see why. That I was going to segue into the movie here, James, that maybe Peanut Butter Falcon was a particularly interesting movie to you. Is I don't know what the right term is in Switzerland. Special education, is that something of particular interest to you, or were you touched by the story in general?
To be honest, I was just touched by the story in general. It's just a really nice story, and I think the actors did a great job, and I just like the movie, yeah.
It is a really nice story.
To become a teacher, you have a lot of different children in your classroom, and especially nowadays, you try to fill in all, like, in one place. So inclusion, it's really important.
Because as a teacher, you could either end up with someone that, you know, you could end up with a class full of kids that are quote unquote normal, or you could end up with a Shia LaBeouf in your class. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to be really,
It's interesting. This is the second week running that we've had a Superfan subject. We've had a movie that not only have I not seen, I'd never even heard of. But Patrick says very positive things, so I will definitely put this on the list. Spoiler alert, Patrick has compiled the quiz. And the good news is, Martin, I know you're eligible to win a Power Pass in Switzerland, because Maureen wins all the passes. So there is a 109 Bronze Power Pass on the line, 10 questions on the board. You know the rules. You know the deal. Please give me a number between 1 and 10.
So last week, the Superfan was pretty mean to Joe, so I don't take away 9. I start with number 8.
Question number 8. What state do Zach, Tyler, and Eleanor make it to at the end of the film?
North Carolina.
Would you like the multiple choice options?
Yeah, give them the mulligan.
Oh, yes, please.
Okay. Is it New York, Texas, Florida, or Pennsylvania?
Oh, of course. Sorry. Florida. Yes.
Okay. So you get 1 point, Martin, and that is your one mulligan. Be careful next time. Okay.
since Joe, Martin any number? Was nice enough to give me number 9, I'll take it. And Martin, I want to warn you that I did not have a chance to rewatch this movie. So you've already got a great strategy by coming in at the 0 hour with this choice. So I will take question 9, please.
Okay, Joe, question number 9. Who plays the role of Eleanor?
Dakota Johnson.
It is Dakota Johnson for 2 points. Dakota Johnson, maybe this is one of her better career choices. Okay, so no 8 or 9, Martin. Any other number is available?
Number 1.
Question number 1. What's the name of Zach's favorite wrestler?
Saltwater Redneck.
Correct for 2 points, and you have a 1-point lead as Joe takes his second question, which can be any number other than 1, 8, or 9.
Dude, that was incredible hearing a guy from Switzerland say the phrase saltwater redneck. I mean, this whole thing is worth it just for that. And James, if I could go to bat for Dakota Johnson for a second in her career choices, someone comes to you and is like, hey, do you want to be in a movie like that Spider-Man adjacent with a bunch of other spider women? You're like, yeah, of course I do. I don't really know if that's her fault. Okay. Question number. Give me the lowest number possible. What is it? 1?
2.
2. Number 2 is the lowest number available. I was also referring to the film adaptations of some of the worst books ever written.
Oh, yeah, because James hates reading.
I hate reading trash, yes. Number 2. Why is Tyler on the run?
I'll take the choices.
Would you like the options?
Yeah.
Yes, because remember, if you get 1 point, you tie the game in the second round. Yeah. So here we go. Why is Tyler on the run? He burned his fishing rival's gear. He stole a boat. He accidentally poisoned the fishing waters. He killed his brother.
No, it's fishing related. I think he burned his fishing rival's gear.
He did. So you get 1 point. We have a tied game going into the third round. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 10, Martin?
4, please.
Question number 4. Where does Zach escape from at the start of the film?
From the retirement home, Brickhaven.
Yes, it's a nursing home, so you get 2 points for that one.
Various, he should get 3 points for knowing the name.
Yeah, that's a fair point. 3, 5, 6, 7, or 10, Joe?
Let's bookend it with 10.
Bookend it with 10. What was Zach's near-death experience that he said makes for a cool story?
I don't know well enough. I'll take the choices.
Almost shooting himself when learning how to fire a shotgun. Barely escaping a fire at the docks. Almost being run over by a shrimp fishing boat. Being beaten up badly in a wrestling match.
I seem to remember it was had something to do with the water. I'm going to go with the fishing boat.
Correct for 1 point. Yeah. See, only behind by 1. The score is 5-4 going into the penultimate round. 3, 5, 6, and 7 are the final 4 questions available, Martin.
So from the German-speaking part, I need to get number 7, right?
Absolutely. Always coming. What does Tyler get hit on the head by during Zach's wrestling match?
It's like iron tail? No.
Do you know what? I think this might be something that's lost in translation. I'm going to give you the points. It's a tire iron. I know what you were trying to articulate there, and I think it was clear. So intention is key. You get the 2 points. You have a 3-point lead. Joe, taking the options might not be an option anymore. 3, 5, or 6?
Give me number 3.
Question number 3. How does Rosemary attempt to help Zach escape?
Now, if I only know the answer in German, is that...
Yeah, I'll take it.
Okay.
That's what we call calling someone's bluff.
just give me the question again.
How does Rosemary attempt to help Zach escape?
How does Rosemary attempt to help? I have to take the choices. I.
Okay, that's fair enough. Does she pretend to choke on pudding while Zach makes a run for it? Handcuffs herself to a guard to stop them from getting to Zach? Sets up a meeting with the mayor and tries to convince him to free Zach?
No.
Smashes a window for him with a big sink?
I like the handcuff or the sink. I'm going to go with the handcuff.
Well, the sink was obviously a reference to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. No, she chokes herself on pudding.
Oh, the pudding choking, huh? Dang. All right.
Yeah. Pudding choking is a thing.
I got to rewatch this movie.
Martin, I think you might have locked this up, but let's see if you can get another 2 points here. Questions 5 or 6?
5, please.
Name the 2 people who are chasing Tyler, and apparently you get 1 point for each.
people who burned down. Duncan and Rat Boy.
Duncan and Rat Boy for the full 2 points.
All right, that's it. Game over.
Game is over, but Joe, try and salvage a little bit of dignity. What does Zach say to talk trash during his wrestling match?
Oh, I should know this. This is like the best scene in the movie. All right, I do need the choices, though. It was a long time ago I saw this.
Okay, here are your options. Peanut Butter Falcon Time. Don't mess with the peanuts. You are not invited to my birthday party. I'm telling your mom.
Oh, they're all such good lines. It's so obvious. Peanut Butter Falcon Time.
No, it's you're not invited to my birthday party. Final score, 4 points to Joe, 9 points to Superfan Martin. You dropped just the one on that very first question. Congratulations, Martin.
Thank you.
You are a winner.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Martin, thanks for coming through for us. It was good to meet you.
Thank you. And Joe, can I just say last week you told us that you feel like a pushover or something because of your stories.
Yes.
But I really appreciate your stories, and I'm glad that we still have some really kind people like you, because I feel if I travel the world, I see so many bad stuff and unfriendly people. So I'm really glad that you are as you are. So stay this way, please.
I appreciate that, Martin. Thank you. I feel like a lot of time, not only do I feel like the pushover, but people like to make fun of me for being a pushover. So thanks, buddy. I appreciate that.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Very kind of you, Martin, but you're still only getting the one power pass, plus the PokerStars merch. Thanks for coming on the show. Good to meet you.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Okay, Joe, before we run through what's happening next week, before we sign off for episode 299, I do very quickly want to highlight that the Sunday Million season starts on Sunday, March 10th. We've already announced the date of the Sunday Million anniversary. That's going to be in early April. But that is now part of a six-week season running from the 10th of March to the 21st of April. And as you can imagine, the idea is that if you're playing key tournaments every single Sunday, you are earning leaderboard points. There are prizes up for grabs. We're talking real money prizes. We're talking scoop tickets as well. And we're talking boosted guarantees of several big tournaments during this 6 weeks. So the expression "never miss a Sunday," which is often attributed to Patrick Leonard, is a particularly appropriate for this period from March 10th to April 21st.
Boy, it sounds like it would be really fun to play the Sunday Million and maybe participate in that season at some point, wouldn't it, James?
Maybe we can talk about that next week.
On episode number 300, recorded live at the Hippodrome, 1 week from today.
Okay, let's run through the headline details. 200 guests are expected at Lola's on the lower ground floor of the Hippodrome. Thank you to everyone who applied. Thank you to everyone who secured tickets. We're looking forward to seeing you. And a reminder that the poker tournament afterwards does have a limit on the number of people who can participate. So the earlier you arrive, the better chance you have of playing.
And for any chance at all of playing, you have to have a PokerStars account.
That is true. I can't remember which guests we revealed and which ones we're holding back. We've already mentioned that Marley's coming, so spoiler alert, Spraggy's going to be there as well. Fenton in attendance. We're going to talk to Rory, Adam, and Boovy from the club, because I think it's fair to say, Joe, that a major focus of our live show at the Hippodrome is going to be looking ahead to the Irish Open.
Yeah, it's basically our Irish Open preview show. That's correct, yes?
One of three, I think, that we're doing.
Fantastic. But there's lots of big things happening at the Irish Open, some of which we'll be talking about on this show. We're going to have the usual fun and games, a couple of high-profile interviews, hopefully, that we are working on. And ideally, we'll be pulling an audience member up onto the stage for a chance to win something. No Superfan versus Stapes, but I think it's going to be something like Superfan versus Fenton versus Spraggy versus Rory versus Adam versus Boovy.
crucially, a Poker in the Ears fan is going to get to be a part of the show. And I realized when we were going through this show the other day, Joe, that it's almost like a best of. It's an amalgamation of all of the elements that makes our podcast what it is. We're going to talk about a poker movie. We're going to talk to a Hollywood celebrity who plays poker. We're going to talk to one of the biggest names in the game. We are going to have a podcast crossover. People are going to be forced to play one of your stupid games. We're going to catch up with two of our favorite team pros. So, yeah, it's kind of like loads of episodes in one. It is going to be a meaty show. It is going to be a long show. But hopefully people enjoy the experience.
All right, that's it, my babies. That show is going to be recorded on Wednesday the 13th. We're going to need a little extra time to turn it around, so it will be released on Friday, so a week from this Friday, the 15th of March. Please, my babies, Discord. In fact, I don't know how we're going to incentivize this, but what I would like to do is, if you've got someone that you know listens to the podcast, get them to join the Discord. Encourage them to play Superfan versus Stapes. We like giving stuff away every week. We don't necessarily want to open the floodgates yet by having repeat superfans out there. We would really like to spread the love as much as we possibly can. So get your friends to join the Discord. Get involved in the conversation. And well, I'll be seeing you in person pretty soon, my babies. Yeah. Most of you, almost 200 of you.
Don't forget, there is a link to the PokerStars Discord server in the podcast description. Doesn't require a download. Completely free to join. Join the conversation. Apply to be on Superfan versus Stapes. We've had some good chat recently, including about gaming regulations. You never know where the conversation's going to go.
Absolutely correct. All right, my babies. That is all the time we've got for this week's show. Until next time, with the 300th episode live from the Hippodrome, for James Hartigan, I am Joe Stapleton. Smell you later.